Okay, thank you very much for kind invitation to come to this workshop. I should say that I'm not the first time for the first time in Canada, but first time in Toronto, so it's nice to be here, and I'm looking forward for a nice exchange and interesting workshop. So the work I will present today is about it's something relatively new and not even finished as far as theoretical activity is concerned. It's about a related subject, what Chris presented in the previous talk. It's about quantum decoherence, essentially low temperature quantum decoherence in quantum dots. And this is about effect of electron interactions in quantum dots. So as you already heard, it's some hot topic for quite some time. So we will present, we want to move this field a bit forward on the theory side, and this is a new work which we have done in collaboration with Dima Golubev, with whom we have done also previous theory about diffusive wires. Okay, so this is the outline of my talk. So I think I will have to make some relatively extended interaction also to motivate the subject of the talk. So I will flash some key experiments and then also address briefly the question, mainly analyzing experimental data available to date. What about this electron-electron interactions versus magnetic impurities? I mean, two competing mechanisms, competing in the sense that, I mean, in the sense of saturation. Can we explain everything with magnetic impurities only, even if we, let's say, have two or more fit parameters for each given sample or not? Then I will come to theory and I will briefly sketch our theoretical formalism, which we use in this new theory. And then I will come to results addressing quantum dots and arrays of quantum dots mainly, and I will summarize in the end. Okay, so I'll start from this famous paper, which Chris also referred in his talk. In this study, which is by now is very famous, as I said, Raj Mahanti, Richard Webb, and Yari Wall, they have studied a lot of diffusive wires and demonstrated very convincingly, also in addition analyzing previous data, that all data about weak localization, which Chris has already introduced, these experiments, they show this feature that at low temperature dephasing time for electrons saturate. And so it was in fact known even before this paper, but nobody has analyzed this so systematically and has focused and has sharpened this question as this authors did. And we were sort of interested in that because it's indeed a very fundamental question, because if it saturates, then for instance at the levels which experiments show, then, for instance, you can forget about Anderson localization as a phenomenon. Not because anything wrong in original theoretical papers, but because electron-electron interactions is not included. And this would give rise to the saturation. And if this is the case, then everything should be reconsidered as far as our understanding of the ground state properties of interacting metal is concerned. And so we decided that we can contribute, and we did. We published this paper, and then both this experimental and theoretical papers, they gave rise to quite a I would say, emotional and long-standing discussion in the literature debates. And in fact, the question which was under discussion actually was much broader and deeper than just this problem of electrons in diffusive wire, namely People started discussing this question in general. Does in general make sense this phenomenon, the coherence of at zero temperature, in this case of electrons, but it can be, of course, any other quantum mechanical degree of freedom. So we are talking about the coherence in the ground state. Does it make sense? And, of course, if you look back into the literature and also in more recent works, not necessarily about electrons, about qubits, about whatever system, many people, most authors actually answer yes to this question. By answering, I mean that they publish papers calculating the coherence rate at zero temperature, giving a finite answer in the formula, in the paper. Yeah. In the ground state, yeah. In or close to, you know, it's a bit subtle because ground state, exactly, ground state is something which doesn't depend on time, yeah? It's steady state. And so it's hard to determine, to define this tau phi. But if you are close to the ground state, infinitely close to the ground state, then you basically calculate something which is a decay rate of coherence in some sense, which doesn't depend on the initial state. So it's a property of the ground state. Okay? Now, in the ground state, if you are talking about, let's say, electrons propagating or moving in a disordered conductor, even in the ground state, you can define not tau phi, but L phi, okay? And then from L phi, you can extract tau phi just in that sense, in this loose sense, you can also define tau phi in the ground state. But in any case, I mean, we know a lot about qubits and various other systems, and we will hear talks about this also during this event. But in any case, many people, starting from famous work of Caldera-Leggett and many others, and of course I am modest, so I didn't add our names to here, but there are also many other authors, and all people say yes in general. Now, there are only few people who say no. Indeed, I mean, say means that they write in papers, not that just we are talking and you say something, but it's in print. Okay? And of course, and this was what was Chris referred to as our understanding. It's, of course, a major blow to this field of, you know, electrons, interacting electrons in disordered conductors, that for such a long time people didn't understand things which they could understand if they would have read, for instance, Caldera-Leggett papers. And those papers, I mean, of course, they are not about electron-electron interactions, but they provide us with some exact results on a model which is simpler, but also is appealing because it allows us to understand much of the physics which is included in the more complicated models. But I assume that there are no supporters of these views in the audience, so let me assume so. Perhaps I'm naive, but okay. So I will not go into this subject of discussing once again what went wrong. And there's, of course, this arguments which Chris has mentioned, this phase space, that if you have a zero temperature, you cannot change the energy, you cannot excite electron, and electron cannot go down. Of course, in energy, because everything is in the ground state, is of course wrong, because those arguments refer to non-interacting electrons, but if electrons interact, they exchange energies always. And that is exactly where all these arguments went wrong. Rather, I will flash you some experiments, of course not all, there are tons of data available to date, and all show saturation, and this was also mentioned by Chris, of low temperature electron decoherence time. So precisely it says so. this saturation is observed in all experiments with all type of conductors in all dimensions. And even though some authors relatively recently, I mean, basically Saclay Michigan collaboration, claimed otherwise, and basically this claim was based on this data. You see this three samples. It was actually even at this intermediate temperature, the fit, as you see, is not perfect to AAK, but at least the claim was that it doesn't saturate. And this claim was recently disproved by Grenoble group, and we have just heard about this from Chris Boyle. Okay, so even these non-saturating, extremely pure samples show saturation if you go to lower temperatures. And so there is practically no physicist now working in the field who would still be saying that it doesn't saturate. So there is consensus basically that it does. And then the question is whether this effect is extrinsic or intrinsic. Because if it is extrinsic, then we can sleep quiet in the sense that everything which was considered to be correct in earlier theories remains correct, and there are only nasty magnetic impurities or, you know, mobile phones or something which destroy your coherence. But if you shut down all mobile operators, then these theories would work perfectly. Well, some, I don't know, should I add non-essential liquids nowadays to this? But in any case, people have started, I mean, there were many suggestions of, these extrinsic mechanisms. And of course, this is, you know, psychologically, this is easily understandable because many people didn't want it to happen that this old theories break down due to whatever reason. So people, started inventing various mechanisms, including some special ones, like, for instance, gravitational waves, or as I already mentioned, these mobile phones. But then what other people did, experimentalists, they just ruled out all these mechanisms one by one, just on purely experimental grounds. And the situation at present, as I see it at least, is such that there are only two sort of potential candidates remain to explain the saturation. This is electron-electron interactions, which you, of course, cannot get rid of at any temperature, so zero temperature, and magnetic impurities as an alternative mechanism. Now, in the next few minutes, I will try to convince you, basing only on the experimental data, that the second mechanism is actually out. So we remain only with electron-electron interactions as an ultimate cause of the saturation. Let me just flash the graph, which you've probably seen already, I mean, Chris showed you, that indeed for these clean wires with this new and very nice theory of Gerges-Arendt with magnetic impurities, you can very nicely fit this data down to low enough temperatures, and then you basically assume two fit parameters which are specific for each sample. If you take some other sample, you will have to plug in a different condor temperature and, of course, different concentration. But then you can, this for clean metallic wires, you can indeed fit. And then, of course, this fit parameter condor temperature, as also previous speaker mentioned, is basically limited by the lowest temperature you can achieve in your experiment. If you would be able to achieve 1 microkelvin, I'm pretty sure you would have to deal with microkelvin temperature. So it doesn't look very convincing, but of course, one cannot disprove it either. However, I'm not sure what is this. I think it's a psychological phenomenon that we are discussing these magnetic impurities already having these very nice results, and they are available since few years due to Mahanti and Webb, who basically ruled out these magnetic impurities, even though one could not detect them. I mean, this is the statement of this paper, of this nice experiment, that one can still say, judge whether they are important for this decoherence or not. So what these people did, they did on the same samples, on diffusive wires, they did two types of measurements. So first is standard weak localization measurements, which showed saturation at certain values of tau phi, consistent with all other results. And then they also did, on the same samples, they did universal conductance fluctuation measurements. And the idea behind this is that unlike in weak localization measurements, in this type of measurement, we can apply strong magnetic field and still determine tau phi or L phi differently, not like in weak localization measurements, but for instance here from this correlation function. But I don't want to go deep into this. I just want to say that the results which these people obtained from both types of measurements, the results for tau phi, were the same, but the most important thing is that in the second measurement, they didn't depend on the magnetic field. That is, the saturated value of tau phi in weak magnetic field and in strong magnetic field, by strong I mean Raj is here, he will correct me, but I think it was 14 Tesla, which was more than enough to polarize, to take out whatever magnetic impurity of whatever spin, one half or one or three half or something else, take it out of the game, just at temperatures of order, I don't know, 100 millik or below. You just compare this KT with magnetic energy, mu times B, and you will be immediately convinced that you can forget about magnetic impurities. No dependence of tau phi on magnetic field was found. And the results of these two type of measurements were consistent. Now, to me, this already, this is an experimental solution of this problem of this magnetic impurities, whether they are important or not. Of course, we know they are important. In principle, they can contribute to decoherence. But magnetic scattering on magnetic impurities cannot be an ultimate cause of saturation, which we observe in all types of conductors. This is also clear. Unfortunately, and this is what I mean by saying that this is a kind of psychological phenomenon in this field, that people tend to forget about this and discuss things as if there would be no such experiments, no such experimental results. And this is strange to me. However, well, possibly this is not just a correct result, so something went wrong, but then I see no reason why other experimentalists would not repeat this experiment, which would also be an option. And in any case, this feed actually belongs to Raj, which is very favorable to us, but anyway, so you see this saturation, which supports our theory very well, unlike this one. Okay, now I will show you something else. Namely, what one can do, one can collect results of many experiments and plot them in the following graph, tau phi at the lowest temperature which was achieved, where you see saturation, not versus temperature as people usually do, but versus, in this case I chose, diffusion coefficient. So each point here is one sample, and you just arrange these points So I chose 18 samples here where we do know from various arguments that there are either no magnetic impurities or at least they are on, the concentration is on undetectable level. And I deliberately didn't include any of the samples reported in this classical Mahanti, Yarival, and Webb work, which I showed. So it's all more recent, as you see. Okay, and there's already quite a statistics, as you see. And you have different diffusion coefficients in different samples, and you see they all fall nicely onto this curve, or this line. And what is this line? This is just D-cube dependence, which was predicted in our work, in this PRL work of 98. So if one would try to achieve similar agreement with magnetic impurities, one would need, I don't know how many feed parameters. Of course, two is out of question. And on top of it, here, the dephasing is so strong for very disordered samples that you would need at least 100 ppm of magnetic impurities in order to get to the values of dephasing rate. And that you can measure in these samples. This is detectable amount of magnetic impurities, and this was not measured. Okay? So this is yet one more argument, which is not as simple as in Raj's papers, yes and no, but it just relies on this amount of data which you have in the literature. And of course, there are more. When we publish this feed, we will probably collect more points. Okay, now there are other systems, not only diffusive wires. So far, I was talking about diffusive wires only. People have seen the saturation, as I said, in other systems, for instance, carbon nanotubes. And this is very old experiments. I think it's before even Mahanti's Webb's work. People see the saturation. Now, more recently, people have studied very disordered multi-wall nanotubes with very short diffusion coefficients. And they have come up, and in fact, two different groups. So you see Helsinki and also Kang. It's completely different experiments. Parameters happen to be similar in these systems, and the results are very similar. Huh? So you see, look at this. This is not millikelvin. This is 20, 15, 10 Kelvin, where one cannot, discuss heating or things like this, and one sees that 1 over L phi already is flat, practically flat, below 10 Kelvin for sure, 10, 5 Kelvin. Okay? And one gets very short dephasing length and dephasing times in the range of 10 to minus 12 seconds. So if one would try, although it sounds a bit crazy to think about magnetic impurities, a lot of magnetic impurities in such a clean object as carbon nanotube, of course one can have some, but not many. So how many impurities should one have in order to get to such huge dephasing in these systems, 1,000 ppm at least. I think it's conservative estimate. In fact, more. And there is no question that one wouldn't be able to feed temperature dependence with two feed parameters. So this is yet one more argument why one cannot possibly think about magnetic impurities as an ultimate cause of this tophite saturation. And which was not flat? What do you mean? This one or what? No, I mean, this is, you see, it's saturation is actually a bad word because it's on a log-log scale, and this one is on the linear scale. So what you should do, in order to get to zero temperature, you should continue, and then you hit this. You see? So it is saturation. If you replot it on the log-log scale, you will see this. Okay, so this is a matter of plotting. And this is, for instance, what Chris showed this. He plotted it on the linear scale, and this was linear also with temperature, but there was an offset. Okay? also in his case. Okay, now, finally, well, there are also plenty of other data in two decks, in three-dimensional systems, which I will not even touch, but this I'm coming closer to already the subject of my talk. In quantum dots, people observe exactly the same, but where are magnetic impurities there? Are there so many? So obviously, there is no way how one can possibly think about magnetic impurities as a real mechanism which would produce saturation in all this. So, and this is what... charge impurities. You mean background charges or something? Yeah, I mean, this is yet one more issue, but then you wouldn't be able to, you know, to explain saturation. You know, you can always think about two-level systems or gravitational waves. You can invent more and more mechanisms, you see. And this is fine, but you should provide the theory for this in order to be able to compare with experiments. But so far, there are no reasons to think about this. Although, of course, you can have charging effects and so on. Well, I mean, even background charges, yeah, or what? Because this multi-wall nanotube is just is very close to a very strongly disordered metallic wire, basically. Okay, and so. There shouldn't be localized charges there in the background somewhere in the substrate possibly, but okay. Anyway, not magnetic impurities. No, okay, good. So we should then go one by one. Step by. There are different experiments. Okay, so this is just two decks. I think this is what is this? This is which I showed. Raj, do you know? This is two decks. So this is yeah. So and what about this? What is here? Yeah, this is two decks. Yeah. Okay, so are you saying there are plenty of magnetic impurities here, or? No comment. Okay, I don't know. Okay, so let me then move on to some other experiments. So obviously there are plenty of other data in other groups which also see saturation, and if we now want to analyze more quantitatively the observations and the conclusions which the authors make, we should basically focus on two regimes. It's high temperature where people observe some power law, and the low temperature where they observe saturation. And more recently, there was a more extensive study, in fact, with essentially the same results. And at high temperatures, they observed this power, and this power was not universal, like two-thirds, but it was dependent on the sample, but basically the range was like this, and at low temperature, again, you see everywhere, you see saturation. More importantly, perhaps, what these people did, they have also plotted, they have produced the plot somewhat similar to what we produced for diffusive wire, but on this axis, they had the dwell time of electron in the dot, not just the diffusion coefficient, but this dwell time, which makes sense. And what they basically concluded that you see here that this dwell time for different dots varies by several orders of magnitude, and tau phi, the saturated value of tau phi, follows. Exactly, and the statistics is I don't know, a couple of dozens of dots, you know, quite many experimental points, and they are all close. They are not exactly on this line, but they are all close. And of course, this crossover temperature, what they call onset temperature, which is hard to define actually exactly because it's smooth crossover, also depends on this, and they say it's two-thirds, but okay, it's a bit more scattered. But of course, it's no wonder if this is the case, then also that should be the case. Something like that should be the case. So they concluded that both saturation temperature and, what is mostly important for us, dephasing time are determined by the dot dwell time. And this is just experimental fact. And then let's see if we can account for this. How much time do I have, by the way? 10 minutes. Okay, I'll manage. If we account for these observations, at least qualitatively, namely, we want to see if we can get to saturation due to electron-electron interactions. And in general, you see, what we are aiming at now is sort of it's quite an ambitious task. We want to construct a general theory which, within the same mathematical formalism, would embrace all types of conductors, electron-electron interactions, theory of electron-electron interactions in diffusive wires, in granular metals or whatever, in two decks, in quantum dots, and in all cases, we believe electron-electron interactions are responsible for the saturation. Although, of course, if you add a lot of magnetic impurities, then also magnetic impurities will give you saturation. But in the absence of these impurities, you will still have saturation due to electron-electron interactions. Now, it is not just we want to argue by exclusion that we have excluded or assume we have excluded all other mechanisms, and then electron-electron interaction is the only mechanism which is left, and then it is the mechanism. But we want to predict something, or to explain already available experimental observation, like, for instance, this one. Okay. And so let me now very briefly remind you what basically Chris already discussed in his talk, is that there is this interference of coherent electrons, which is very important in disordered conductors, and it produces interference correction, which is called weak localization correction. And it goes like this, that you have just this Kubo formula where you have retarded and advanced Green functions. And if you discuss these objects semi-classically, then basically you have to take the action on a certain path. And then it was already explained that these time-reverse paths are important ones, and they interfere with each other. Basically what enters into this weak localization correction to do the conductance is return probability, which is called Couperon for this time reverse path, probability to return to the same point and interfere. Okay, so there are other paths, classical paths, when two paths go together, and this is just classical Drude term in the conductance, and this is quantum term. Okay, so this is Couperon. Now, what about decoherence due to interaction? So we know in general that electron-electron interactions can be described by some effective fluctuating field produced by electrons. And this field is acting on each electron. And then electron propagating in the sample picks up this phase, which depends on this field. And then if you average over this fluctuating field and also different paths, then you get this additional exponent to this expression, and this exponent decays. This is decaying exponent in time, and you can extract the time scale to phi, and this is how electron-electron interactions produce decoherence. Okay. Now our model, since we are so ambitious and we want to basically to construct a theory of everything. Of course, not everything, but this electron-electron interaction in different types of conductors. We're considering this basic model, which is arrays or array of quantum dots, and scatterer. So you have this quantum dot, and you have scatterer for which basically you should know only very little, namely the number of channels, arbitrary, and the distribution of transmissions, again, arbitrary. Okay? And if you think about it, you will quickly understand that by this model, extending it, for instance, to two-dimensional systems and three-dimensional, choosing different geometries, you can mimic any kind of, you can describe any kind of the disordered conductor. For instance, you can describe metallic wire, assuming, okay, this is your quantum dot and this is your scatter. So all channels here are open except for one, where you have this impurity, and here electron gets scattered. Okay, and so you have basically the number of this dots or scatterers is the number of impurities of scatterers in your wire. And of course you can consider single quantum dot, double quantum dot, and so on. Now, so basically, this is about sort of anatomy of electron decoherence. How, in the presence of electron-electron interactions and scattering on static impurities, this decoherence appears. And if you start from the simplest situation, namely you have one quantum dot, modeling it by two scatterers and some cavity here, you quickly understand just using this language of path that there is, so basically what you assume here, that you have voltage drop only here and here on two scatterers, but not inside. Okay, inside there is no voltage drop because, okay, this is a model. And then you easily understand that the phase electron picks up on a forward and backward path, on forward and time reverse path, are the same, always, identically the same, and hence, in the presence of this fluctuating field produced by electron-electron interaction, there is no decoherence. But this is not about zero temperature decoherence. This is general statement. At any temperature, in this object, there is no decoherence. Okay? So what exists here is only renormalization. Perhaps I skip this part. It's more technical, but basically, for this system, there is an effect of electron-electron interaction, of course, but there's only some non-trivial renormalization of transmissions of this conducting channel. And so you can basically take non-interacting result and substitute renormalized transmission, and you will get weak localization correction, for instance, in this system. But it is not decoherence. Decoherence appears, however, if you have, for the first time, so to speak, when you have three barriers. There, already, for this barrier, you do not have this cancellation which you had before in the previous example. And it sees, I mean, this fluctuating phase, you know, it gives different contribution to retarded and advanced propagators. And in this case, you have already, when you average, you have this average smaller than one, and then you have finite dephasing. And then, of course, if you build up more scatterers, then, of course, this will remain. So for three scatterers and more, you will have dephasing due to electron-electron interactions. For two scatterers, not. Okay, and then very briefly, I will sketch here this formalism, and I mean, I don't have much time. I will come to results, but still I should flash it because we're at some mathematical institute, I feel, so we have to sort of respect this. And okay, so we our formalism, I mean, the model I already introduced, this is this model of array of quantum dots connected by arbitrary scatterers. So we described the scatterers by means of scattering matrix. Each scatterer is described by its own scattering matrix. So this is most general quantum mechanical description of scattering, which you can think of. And then we use a nonlinear sigma model to account for disorder and, I mean, average and all this. And then we use Keldysh technique, and so there is this action of non-interacting problem. We can first solve non-interacting problem, which is already complicated enough. And the main object is this 4x4 matrix field. And when you integrate over this field, so you basically you take into account everything exactly. And then, so let me skip it. So in the metallic limit, only Gaussian fluctuations of this field can be considered. And then there is some convenient parameterization which we introduce. And this allows us to basically to write down equation for discrete Couperon in this problem. And then there is this all these technical things, which I probably will skip, which allow you in the end to evaluate weak localization correction so far without interaction. And then basically what you have to know is only conductances of each scatterer, which is just Landauer conductances, and final factors, these combinations. And then everything is expressed in terms of these quantities. And then also you can, knowing weak localization correction for each scatterer, you can also describe weak localization correction for the whole array. And then you, what you basically as a test, you can reproduce a lot of, for this one-dimensional array, a lot of known results like weak localization correction of a very long array. Like quantum dot for two scatterers, you have this result. You can also derive more general results which were not known before, like this one, which is nothing special, it's just a combination, and you see this all this factor. This is perhaps more interesting. You see this Fano factor entering here and the number of dots, and of course when the number of dots goes to infinity, you again reproduce this diffusive limit. Now, as I already said, that for us, the simplest system which we want to study is the system which consists of three junctions, three scatterers. And then if those junctions are tunnel junctions, that you have final factors equal to one, and also you assume that the central junction is much weaker, so to speak, than two others, this is just a technicality, then in this case we arrive at very simple result for weak localization correction. No interaction so far. And we have more results about non-interacting system which we recently published. But now I come to interactions. So we introduce interactions according to Keldysh technique with fluctuating fields and all this, and believe me that we know how to do it. So we get to this action, and then we, for simplicity, this assumption. Now all conductances are much larger than one, but one is smaller than two others. So we are dealing with tunnel junctions just to get rid of these final factors. And then all these technicalities. What is important is that for this limit, the third and the first junctions are basically linear elements. So you can restrict yourself by the quadratic fluctuations in this fluctuating field. And this is basically not an approximation. This is like something almost exact. And then this system can be mapped after all this, not initially, not in the beginning, but after all this machinery of nonlinear sigma model have been worked out, you are left with some effective system where fluctuations of the field here and here, here and here, are the same as in the system of resistor, tunnel junction, and resistor. And then what you have in that system is just two correlation functions which determine you everything. So one is a phase correlation function, and those who know the celebrated POV theory, this is exactly this thing, where you have this cotangent and all this is exact expression. And response function, which is essentially the difference of two correlators. And it can also be calculated like this. And then, after this, we get an exact result, which is, since it is exact, it's quite long, so I don't even write it, especially because we didn't publish it yet, but we are planning to do it soon. But I only want to first to convey a message that we have this exact result now for the system of three scatterers. And so it's almost like in Caldera-Leggett that we should not now debate about approximations or something. There are no approximations except G2 is much smaller than G1 and G3. Here we have all these cotangents. Once again, this F contains this cotangent. And this is just a classical correlation function of voltages, so to speak. And what enters, and it is the exponent, it decays. And what enters here also are these factors. And notice this K, this conductance is large, and this K is not growing with time at sufficiently large times. Okay, so this decay, so this is just one, and the conductance is large. Yeah. So what we have here is always small quantity in the exponent. It's 1 over G, 1 over conductance, which is small. Okay, and if you expand to the first order in this K, then in the zero order, of course, look here, this is 1 minus F, H is 1 minus F, and this F, and with extra sign minus, in the zero order they cancel, and in the first order they produce 1 minus 2 Fermi functions, which is just tangents epsilon minus mu over 2t. So if you do, for those who know, I make this remark, if you do perturbation theory to this result, perturbation theory in interaction, which means perturbation theory in 1 over conductance, 1 over G, yeah, two slides. Then what you have, you have to expand this F, and in the first order you get cotangent, and from these terms you get tangent, which cancel almost exactly each other. And this is, the whole theoretical debate was about this point. But since now we have an exact result, we know how it works. Indeed, this is true. But in fact, if you do not expand, and you should not in general, then you see that this does not grow, and this only can oscillate, and it's small anyway, whereas this decays. And this tells you everything. On top of it, this our conductance is large, and this allows to disregard this K in the large conductance limit whatsoever. And then we get to an extremely simple result for the weak localization correction. And the main features is power law at high temperatures and saturation of this weak localization correction at low temperatures. And here, in addition to this non-interacting result, we get this factor. And this is RC time, this is dwell time, and the gamma is just Euler constant, it's a 4 to 1. Okay, and then if you introduce dephasing time, we want to extract dephasing time for this system, you see exactly those features which people observe experimentally in quantum dots, namely at high temperatures, you get some power law dependence of tau phi on temperature. However, this power is not universal, it depends on the conductance of your system. And at low temperature, you see saturation, not exactly at the values of dwell time, but it is, you know, numerically, there is not much difference, because if you plug in numbers from those experiments, I don't want to go into details, then this conductance is of 4 to 1 here, and this factor is basically of 4 to 1. So this is the main thing. And so you see here, you take 60, 40, 20, you hardly notice the difference. I mean, it's basically almost the same. If you have 100, it's a bit different, but still, I mean, it's within this fluctuations, within this wiggling about this straight line. So basically, that's it. The summary, which, I mean, the main messages which I want to convey to that moment of time, is that we have constructed novel theoretical approach which which will allow to describe weak localization for any type of disordered conductors, and this is because of our model. Now, for no interactions, we have studied arrays of quantum dots and, first of all, reproduced previous results and obtained some new results. But most importantly, and this was our aim, is to study electron-electron interactions. And so far, we have obtained exact solution for three scatterers, as I described to you. This is the simplest system where you have decoherence due to electron-electron interactions. So what we obtain is precisely these features which people see in experiments, in particular low temperature saturation of dephasing time in qualitative agreement with experiments, but we cannot pretend on more because the model is not exactly what can be applied to this experiment. And as I also said, this is ongoing activity, so the next step would be to study d-dimensional arrays of scatterers and produce the same kind of theory. For diffusive conductors, we are planning to compare with our results, which we have obtained from a different approach. And this will be possible, and we are curious what the results of this comparison will be. So far, we cannot say anything. And we also are planning more detailed comparison with experiments. Thank you for your attention.